Thanks for listening to Resume on Podcast One.
Oh, and it's Resume. That's right. Sounds so good. My name is Chris Loxamana. I am your host for the day. And once again, this is the podcast where we talk about, that's right, resumes. The career paths of the best people in the world. And today, oh, I'm excited. We got Andrew J. Cohen.
Hey-o.
Hey-o. Andrew just came out with an incredible movie. If you haven't heard about it, then you haven't been outside. You haven't been watching TV, anything. Because it's called The House. In theaters everywhere. Will Ferrell, Amy Poehler, Jason Mantzoukas. You have I was thinking about it. You have a super team. You have the Golden State Warriors of comedic actors.
Oh, it's true. Yeah, we have superstars, all stars.
In this movie, yeah.
Full professionals. They lay it out there fully in this movie. I'm so proud. And I just love everybody's performance. We had a great group of actors, those three. Plus ton of other people. Nick Kroll, Rob Hubel.
Exactly.
Lennon Parham. Like Andrea Savage. Everybody has their own show. Cedric Yarbrough, who's on Speechless. Rory Scovel, who's got a Netflix special.
Oh, yeah. He just got one.
Yeah. So these are black belts.
They are.
Yeah. Black belts of comedy.
And it's why don't you give a quick premise of the film?
Sure, sure. It's about a couple who can't afford college for their daughter. So they start a casino in Jason Mantzoukas' house. Which is high concept because it's Jason Mantzoukas' house.
And let's see. So you wrote this movie and you actually directed it too. You co-wrote it.
Yeah, co-wrote it with Brendan O'Brien, produced it and directed it. This is my feature directorial debut.
All right, let's talk about talk about the writing first.
Yes, sir.
The concept of this film. How'd you guys come
about
it?
Should I put my resume away? I brought my resume on high stock paper with bullet points.
I want people to get to know you first.
Oh, okay. I'll put it away. I'll fold it up.
Okay. It's such a nice paper, though. Let's keep it. Just put it on the shelf.
I'll roll it up like an old scroll.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll still be good after that.
Okay,
we'll flatten it out.
Nice. What was the question?
the writing process.
Writing.
I'm always interested in the creation, the writing, the concept.
It was so the origin of the story was in high school. I used to go to my friend Todd Kramer's house and play high low poker, and he even had like a craps felt that we would, ninth grade of high school. All the girls disappeared for some reason.
They weren't interested in it.
Unknown why that happened. I know, because I was like hitting my streak.
They're more of Hold'em players, I think. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't like the high low.
Yeah, exactly. They were like, poker.
Yeah.
More like blackjack, am I right, ladies? So they went to the older guy's house, I believe. And we were like, what the hell do we do? And so we went to Todd Kramer's house and Phil Mock's house and Mike Savali's house, but mostly Todd Kramer's house.
This is Brendan, too. You guys knew each other for a while.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Crazy. So I don't know if he was at Todd's, but we thought we were really cool. And originally, this movie was going to be about kids who started a casino and their parents don't know about it. And I had this idea for a while and I kept trying to pitch it. And then after Neighbors, my manager was like, you guys write people who, adults going through crises so well. What the hell? Why don't you make it about the adults? So that just made it so funny. Like once we saw it as like me and you starting a casino and then finding a cheater and needing to rough him up in the garage. Like that just made me laugh so hard.
Having to resort that low.
Yeah, well, like, what would I do? I was like, I would like tie him up and like lay out like a saw and like a screwdriver and a vacuum cleaner and be like, "This is coming. I'm coming for you, baby."
Vacuum cleaner.
I don't know. I don't. Whatever the most intimidating thing. My 3-year-old son's terrified of a vacuum cleaner, so that's what I think. That's the reference. I'm he's scared of it. Maybe somebody else will be.
Yeah. Well, I would be too, because that's just so mysterious. Like a saw. Yeah. Okay, I know what they're gonna do with that. I know they're gonna do that. What the hell are they gonna do with this vacuum cleaner?
Yeah, yeah. You ready to suck? But so then once it was like 40-year-old parents trying to be gangsters, that seemed like a lot funnier. It just seemed, you know, so we kind of took it from there. That was, you know, the initial kind of, okay, we've got something, was the garage scene, and we kind of built to there. And also, I just knew they were going to get dark, you know, sort of once they got further and further into the casino experience, that they were going to lose themselves a little bit. So that was part of the fun of it too, is like, well, how much are you going to lose yourself? And to me, it's always funny in comedies when there's consequences to people's actions. So I really wanted to play it straight. Like, how would I feel if I tried to be Heisenberg? Like,
yeah,
in my mind, you know, everyone's like, oh, there's a Heisenberg in everybody. Like, I don't know. Like,
yeah. How do you channel that?
Yeah, you know, like, yeah.
How can you possibly know what you can do?
What, like, you can do and what you can't, right? So that, to me, that's the question. And if you place these parents in such a terrible situation that of not being able to afford college for their kids, it's like one of the main things we expect of parents in America, right? Yeah. Provide. And, you know, that crisis of like not being able to provide for your kid, not feeling like a real man, not feeling like a real woman, it's really funny because your back's against the wall and you can do something extremely, extremely stupid. So that was the kind of comedic engine of the house. And once we built the engine, it's like way fun to build the car. You know,
I like how you started from that garage scene. It's, you know, it's really similar to like a musician, like starting from like the chorus or something. Like, all right, we got the chorus.
Right,
the core. Like, now let's just build around it and let's shape it into something really crazy.
Yeah, or like the hook, or the, you know, or the beat, or like whatever that you're laying down.
Yeah,
you start with that, and then you go, I know I got something, because if I can do the before this, and then into this, and then after this, because it's like, what happens after you rough up the cheater?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, what's the consequence of that?
Why did you choose to direct it then?
So, I've always wanted to direct. I went to college for directing. I've always wanted to direct. I went to college for directing. I directed something in eighth grade that like, I don't know. I just knew it. I knew I want. I cut it with two VCRs, you know, like this thing. And like, it didn't play on the mono VCRs at school. So I took a stereo VCR in a briefcase. Biggest nerd.
Yeah.
Like, super geeked out.
This was before your poker days.
This was before my poker days. This was eighth grade.
Oh, you were a nerd before.
Right.
That.
So,
okay.
Yeah. But, dude, I was like, you know, I was the guy who had the – who directed the movie. So, I'm ready for ninth grade.
Yeah.
I thought everything was going to happen. I was like, oh, shoot. I guess I peaked. But, yeah. No. So, always wanted to do it. Nobody wants you to direct in Hollywood. Like, when you write a script – they go, oh, sweet, I got an awesome script. I'm going to go get, you know, so-and-so who just directed blank.
It's hard to take risks, right? Nobody really does that anymore. So they need someone tried and true.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because it's like they're going to their boss, and the boss goes, well, who's directing? It's like, well, the guy that wrote it. You know?
That's how they pitched you, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, excuse me? Like, no, so I had to prove myself. Like, I had to you know, create a lookbook and pitch it, which is basically a visual representation of how the movie's going to look and smell and feel, and even how it's going to be cut and colors and just trying to pack it in. And I remember my first page was like, you know, it was almost like the Step Brothers house on top and then the casino from Casino on the bottom. And it was like, normal on the outside, crazy on the inside. Like, that was the aesthetic for the movie.
Yeah.
And you start there, you end here. And it's sort of about that, like the darkness within you and the wildness within you, which, I don't know, to me, that's really fun visually, because things can get crazier and crazier.
Yeah, and you have that kind of freedom, too. I mean, I know a lot of comedic writers who, you know, give their script out and then somebody else that they have no idea who that person is will direct it.
Yeah.
And they're just pulling their hair out at home, just thinking like, oh my God, they got that joke wrong. They missed the beat. They did this wrong.
Yeah.
They edited that wrong. So like to have like complete creative control. I mean, I'm like that. Like, I need it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I could see like how that would just drive me nuts too.
Yeah. No, it helps. It helps to have written something that you're directing. I actually think it gives you a leg up just because you know the characters so well. And I would remember stuff that we cut out of the script that on the day I'm like, oh, dude, we have to try this because that's your alt. It's like, well, what's your alternate joke here? What's the alternate right. way you can shoot the scene?
My favorite DVD features.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And by the way, my younger brother cuts all that stuff. So we work together in the same office. He's cutting it. So we're
making. I love it.
There's good shit on this. Like, we had to not include so many things in the movie that we will include on the Blu-ray.
Good.
But yeah, no, being able to, you know, go, well, what's the second best idea? Well, what about the one we had to cut for space or time, you know, in the script, you know, so you're prepared with different options already, you know, because you've been there and because you've been sweating for the past 2 years about how am I going to write this.
And yeah, you have a lot more tools and you have approval already because you're the director and the writer. You don't have to
exactly.
worry about it.
Well, let me go check with the boss. Yeah. Me. No.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I checked. I'm good with it.
Yeah. He's being a real dick about it. Doesn't want to do it. But yeah.
All right, so once again, that's The House, in theaters everywhere. Will Ferrell, Amy Poehler, Jason Mantzoukas, Rob Hubel, everybody. And it is crazy. And it's out now, so please, if you guys want to laugh, you can't go wrong with these guys. Let's take it back. Let's get that resume off the shelf, because I want to know how you got to from where you started to writing and directing a film that a major player, like one of the biggest movies of the year. Like,
yeah. Let me unfurl this resume. Hold on.
All right.
I'm just there we go.
It wasn't rolled up that long.
No. Yeah.
Put a couple books on the corners. Let's lay it out for a little bit.
It's not even that long a resume. I don't need to unfurl that much. But
because you went to school, like you just said, like you went to college for that, so you know.
I went to college for directing. Actually, as a production major, so I had to make a short film as my final project. The teacher would not let me shoot on 35mm. And I was like, why not? You know, I'm like, and he's like, because you'll never show this to anybody. And I shot on digital video and I've never shown it to anybody.
Oh, so he got you. Yeah.
I didn't even show it to my wife. Like it was good.
It might be kind of cool to dig up now.
Dude,
though, right?
It was pretty good. It's pretty good. It was the Telltale Heart in romantic comedy context. So it takes place at a graduation party. Guy's hooking up with a girl in her basement. His heart starts beating so loud that he hears it, and then she hears it, and then the whole party hears it. And, you know, he's got to tell her the truth in order to make it stop, which is he's a virgin.
You had a party scene in
hell
college?
Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah. No, so it was, we did the party scene. I had I shot it on like a Steadicam too. Like there was 360 moves around the cars, and I was trying to make it all.
Oh, so you took it real seriously.
Yeah, I took it real seriously. I always took it seriously. I believe that no matter what the project, you got to make it better than it deserves to be. Especially comedies, man. I think like well constructed, well made comedies, well shot comedies. I don't know. There's something that it puts me in the headspace where I go, it looks perfect, but then these people are acting like crazy.
Yeah.
So I like that, you know, tension between how it looks and what.
Yeah, there's like a really cool juxtaposition. Like, oh, that is a beautiful shot, and I'm cracking up right now. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Like, and like we always say on Adam's show too. I mean, it's crazy how comedies don't get put up for like best editing in anything, just because like that's all it is. Is editing. It's
absolutely
all the editing, like the breathing, the beats, the in jokes and everything like that.
It's timing, and it's
like not everybody can do that.
No, I worked with two really, really talented editors on this one. Each good at different kinds of things. Evan Henke was awesome at like a lot of the girl fight sequence. He cut that like a lot of the set piece type stuff. And then my other editor, Mike Sale, who is a genius when it comes to testing and interpreting audiences. He's like, he's like a diviner. Like he can like read sticks and dirt and read the tea leaves and stuff.
Was that a yawn?
Yeah.
We gotta write that down. Write that time down.
Tall Lena Dunham didn't like that joke. You know, like bored guy on the right. He hates it. You know, and then like you
blink twice this minute.
Yeah, yeah. Girl's covering her eyes, but she's still smiling.
Yeah.
You know, we videotape every single one of those and look at it. But hey, let's get back to.
Oh yeah,
let's
get back. But I like that you take all that into account as well as like the jokes.
Oh, and
the writing, because as you said, you like to write it. You like to make it funny, romantic comedy with a telltale heart, things like that. So
yeah.
The jokes are there, but you wanting to make it look good.
Yeah,
that's an important part that I think gets overlooked sometimes.
Yeah, if you can put extra layers into something, you can communicate on a lot of different levels. You know, mm-hmm. having been a film student, all we're doing is writing papers on that stuff. So it's like if I didn't do it, I would almost be, you know, I'm just gonna stop. You know, like
yeah.
I can't help it. You know, especially if it fits the story as it did in this case, where as they act more and more like gangsters accidentally, the movie becomes a gangster movie and they're trapped in a genre and they're unable to escape. So
yeah.
that was like definitely part of the plan and really fun to execute. So yeah, man,
you should dig that footage up one day and show it to people.
The thing I did in college.
Yeah,
I'll take a look. First I'll take a look, and then we'll see if it's like you know, one of those old pair of jeans you wear on to the club.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You can they'll come back.
You can see how often I wear old jeans to the club.
Old pair of jeans to the club. Yeah, so
I'm 40. So directed that thing, did some like sight and sound NYU courses during the summer.
So you dipped your hands in a lot of those.
Tried to do it, man.
Departments.
Yeah. Really tried to do it. And then
that's good though.
Came out, I learned a ton. You know, you got to fail. Like you don't know your voice, you don't know anything growing up. Like half of the stuff you're making is just a regurgitation of what you've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just got to get it out of your system. I think
so. Which college kid would you hire then? Would you hire the guy that is very meticulous and puts out one project that he spent all, you know, his whole time doing, or the guy that's putting out just a bunch of things as much, but you see it constantly improving? Because I mean there's two different kinds of
that's a great question. I think that the latter.
Yeah.
Only because turnaround is very important to me when we're working. So it's almost easier to, and I don't know what I'm hiring him for. Just as a cool dude. Like, I guess I'm as an assistant or something.
Or like who in your head do you see like becoming more successful?
Oh, that's different. So,
yeah.
I think actually the person that keeps making this stuff, I honestly think the like, part of getting better at anything is, you know, taking risks, failing, like learning, picking yourself up. Like I tend to go very ambitious on what I do. And so I try to set my sights high.
Yeah.
And, you know, you try to make your mark. But I don't know. Some other people, you know, why not make something very small? Get it out of your system. Make another small thing. Get it out of your system. Like, I really admire the way kids are making videos nowadays, just because I'm like, oh my God, if I had this, I would have totally been doing it. So they're taking full advantage of it, and they're becoming super literate in movie making in a way that we never were. You know, like
it's crazy how advanced they are with editing. Like they edit all their own stuff. They just create all their own content, and they're turning it around
right
on the internet. And
it's almost like everybody runs a newsroom about themselves. And
oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, okay, here on the 5 o'clock, you know, and it's like, this is what I'm doing. You know?
I just parked. I just want to let you guys.
Boop.
Yeah,
you know,
selfie.
But there's something wild about it. People bemoan it. But honestly, like we were joking yesterday, it's like, man, thank God people are seeing movies rather than playing video games. You know, before it was like, yeah, man, thank God they're reading books instead of seeing movies. You know, like it just keeps slipping. But
it's heading that way.
But it's the new language that we communicate in. I think media savviness is super important. And it's making or breaking, you know, social movements. Honestly,
yeah.
So
the game's constantly changing, like especially
yep.
now. Like
yep.
everything
yep.
is everything's different. And
so yeah. So I think the guy I really like this hypothetical guy or girl who's making a ton of stuff and then learning
yeah.
with each one. I think it was really hard for me to finish, you know, and you gotta force yourself to finish, because if you don't finish, you never finish.
Yeah.
Right? So you're gonna start, and then you're gonna just start another one, and then you're gonna start another one. So even just completing it, giving it to somebody, them going, this isn't good, or this is good in these parts, but you know what, you can work on this, boom, you just got gold that you can now go back and do something else with. So it's like, I don't know. It's never what I'm making, it's what I'm, you know, gonna make. Actually, yeah, let me take that back. That's not true at all. I like saying stuff that sounds good.
No, I agree. Like, I think you just got to constantly, because you learn so much from once it's all done, you step away from what you just did.
Yeah.
Whether it's amazing or it's crap. Like, you just learn, I think, the most.
And nothing beats experiential learning. Like, if you can experience something, it'll be in your muscle memory. You know, and so the more experience you can have, the better off you're going to be, because you go, oh, well, I remember in this situation I had to do this, or in this situation I had to do that. So I don't know. That's what film school was.
Was it film? You went to Yale.
I went to Yale University.
So that's, I mean, how intimidating is that? Like, just like, oh, yeah.
It's weird. I mean, everybody is like, you know, it's like, well, I wrote a book when I was in ninth grade, and I was on the bestseller list. And then it's like, you know, or like, I'm the you know, the most known, you know, 18-year-old scientist in Mississippi, or something. And then you're like, I don't know, like, I wrote a thesis on biology. And I understand molecular organisms. You know, you're just, I don't know. I don't, like, why am I here? What am I doing? And people don't, you know, I think now, it's funny, there's a big tradition of experimental film at Yale, like Stan Brakhage. Like, he would have, like, a moth that he would put on a piece of film, and there's a film called Moth, and it's just moth wings, but, like, a lot of moth wings. So it's that kind of tradition, but strangely, there's a lot of people from Yale. Like, the head of New Line now, he's from Yale. Like, yeah. Let's stop talking about Yale.
Oh, I just
sorry.
I don't mind.
No, I'm just kidding.
I don't know what it's like going.
No,
it's
strange.
Production.
Strangely intimidating. Everybody's the best at whatever they did. Yeah. Like, it's you know, there's a lot of, you know, it's either like super well-rounded people, but a lot of like really good at blank, not good at blank.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, sure.
And so I think the life skills maybe happen at college or after. You know.
Yeah, and if you can show your you know, whatever you're working on to fellow students at Yale, I mean, you can show them to anybody, right?
That's a good point. That's a good point.
All right, so after college, what happens?
So then I go to Japan
for
three and a half weeks, because I wanted to go backpack, and I went alone.
Oh, you're finding yourself.
I was finding myself. And I also went to the Fuji Rock Festival, which was really cool. And so that was – it wasn't the reason I went, but I went there.
Japan Rock Festival.
Well, the band Fish was there, and at the time I was into them. And
so that's why it was 3.5 weeks, right? They played
one song. You got me. Exactly. They played a sick show. I went like Tokyo, Kyoto, and then went up to Fuji Rock Festival, and then Kobe, and Hiroshima. It was awesome. But I called a ryokan in Hokkaido, which, you know, is like where Sapporo is. And I was like, hey, do you have any space available? And they were like, no, we're out. And I was like, I'm going to L.A. Like, it was literally
last drop. Strike three, Japan.
Okay, Japan. You're not doing it for me, Japan. I'm going to L.A. I think I really was waiting for the universe to go, what are you doing?
We're done here.
Let's get started, dude. What are you doing? So I did. I drove out to L.A. with my, you know, he wasn't my writing partner at the time, but with Brendan O'Brien. We took my car, which was stick. I told him I would teach him how to drive stick on the way.
Oh, you drove the whole way.
I drove the whole way. Like all it took was we had to stop at a toll booth, and we didn't stop. Like, it just kept rolling. And I was like, okay, yeah, I'm going to drive now. And then I crashed on his couch in Hermosa Beach. He was coming out to be with his soon-to-be wife, like, you know, fiance. They weren't engaged at the time, but he really wanted to get out. And I was like, let's go find ourselves.
That's
in Chicago.
So cool.
Like, I was like, okay, like, there was a moment, I think, at White Sands, New Mexico. Or maybe it was in Chicago, actually, where it was like, very clear that we were leaving. Like, I wanted to stay for like a week and a half. And then it was like, but so, you know, again,
you just have to go.
Again, the universe was sending this message. You got to get to LA. So crashed on his couch, shaved in the sink, didn't clean up after myself. They kicked me out. him and his girlfriend.
Are you even looking for a job at this
no,
time?
No, no, no. All I was doing, I was just growing a beard and shaving it. That was it. And so then, like, you know, I had to look for an apartment in Hollywood and get a job. So I started working at a creative artist agency. Which is like the
huge.
biggest talent and what they call literary agency. So directors, writers, producers, actors.
Yeah.
And it's like swimming with sharks, you know? It's definitely a tough place. You develop a very thick skin, do things that you never thought you would do. I stopped working for one woman, and I gave her flowers, and she goes, "You know, I like dried flowers." And so I took them back and I dried them.
You dried them with a dehydrator for a little bit.
I hung them upside down in my apartment for the weekend. I just like didn't want to leave on bad terms. You know, like I was so young, I really wanted to make it. And
I think that was the right move.
I think it's the right move.
Yeah, that's the right
move. And then when I was working there, I started working for Sonia Rosenfeld in television. Sweetest woman. She allowed me to, you know, write, and I got really scared and bored there. It was like feeling like, what am I doing? I don't want to be an agent. I really want to write.
That's right, yeah.
I really want to direct. Like, what, you know, I'm learning.
It's a good way to get your foot in the door, though, right?
Great foot in the door. Yeah. So I wrote and directed like shorts and commercials while I was there.
Just for yourself.
Just for my sanity.
Yeah.
Just to prove I could.
Yeah.
And to not let the muscle die. And, you know, I directed this spec commercial for Nokia. It took place at a funeral where phone starts ringing, and the priest is like, uh-oh. Like, he checks his phone, and then the wife of the deceased checks her phone, and all the people are checking their phone, and then the priest realizes it's coming from inside the coffin, and he takes the phone out, and he looks up at this guy, and he's like, "Hello?" And then the tag is, "Nokia, take it with you."
Oh, I love that. That's a great commercial.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah. Spent my own money, shot on 35mm, and
take that, college professor.
Yeah, yeah. What are you? Yeah, 35. I spent all my money on it. And it actually paid off. It paid off because I ended up showing it to my boss. We talked about maybe trying to get commercial work. But then I heard about Adrian Lyne looking for an assistant on Unfaithful, the Richard Gere movie with Diane Lane,
oh, yeah,
and Olivia Martinez, who was hot.
Yeah.
So I get there. He's interviewing in New York, and it's great because CAA is where I heard about it. Like, they have all the information in the world. So an assistant who got to know me when I was suffering on the other desk was like, "Oh, I found out about this. You know, Adrian's looking for an assistant. He wants to mentor somebody, a director." So I was like,
Oh my God.
Flew to New York on my own dime, got there, and immediately he's like, "I heard you shot a commercial." And I was like, "Yeah." I was like, I brought it with me. And he's like, "Stick it on." And then I turn it on. And then he like watched it three times and gave me notes.
Oh, really?
And yeah, no, it was freaky, but it was like, oh my God, like this is the coolest thing ever. And then he offered me the job. So I moved to New York. They hired as a local.
What a cool guy.
Like, it was awesome.
Like, who would take the time to actually do that,
well,
you know?
Yeah, I mean, it was almost – it was a requirement because he needed somebody who could – like, I've done the exact thing that he did. Like, mm-hmm. So for the house, I hired somebody just like he hired me, who is a director, to be my director's assistant. Just because I was – and I had them do what Adrian had me do on this movie, which is – you know, hey, what's show? Make a compendium of the best, sex scenes. Give me, cars skidding on the road scenes. Uh-huh. You know, give me, you know, and so you have to make, you know, you have to cut together like a rip reel or whatever. And it's inspirational, and it allowed him to come up with great ideas. You know, you don't just do the ideas. You go, well, how do I apply it to this movie? How do I add something that makes it, takes it further? But I have I remain open to all, you know, input from everywhere. Just through Adrian, his office was like filled with images that he ripped out from magazines to know, you know, whether, you know, and I would have to like go get stacks of magazines. I'm like dropping all this money on magazines, and they're like, "Oh, you really like reading, huh?" yeah, I love magazines. But ripping them out, and then I made this special script where the right side of the page was all the dialogue. And then the left side of the page was all the images, and even like he would tape record notes when we were doing scouting for locations, and he'd come up with shots. So it was putting, those into the book. And so he would have this like script where it was like overhead diagrams of how am I going to shoot this scene? And this guy's going to walk from this room to that room. And, location scouting notes and just random musings, you know, so it was like, oh man, this is how you do it. And so we gave that to every department head. And so I was like, I'm never going to not do this on a movie. Everybody's on the same page. Everybody knows what movie we're making because it's right there.
Yeah. So you laid it all out.
So just doing that for him, it was weird. I was like playing, we would shoot MOS, you know, no sound, certain things. And then I would have to, like, somebody was like, mentioned some other director that plays music during dailies when you're watching no sound. So Hadrian's like, why don't you do that? And then so I'd have to DJ dailies and be like, okay, like we just shot at the dump. Here's some really good dump music, you know. But we got to experiment with like who's, you know, what composers could we use in this? You know, like what's the feeling? Even then he was like allowing me this access.
Yeah.
I was a pig in shit. It was so cool. I was in on writing sessions with Susanna Grant and Adrian, and you know, got some jokes in the movie even.
So I love that it wasn't just like a director's assistant, give me my coffee, give me the size for the day, things like that. It was like you were actually able to experience the creativity that was happening.
He invited me. I got spoiled as shit.
Yeah,
no,
I'm jealous, man.
I got really spoiled. I think in Europe it's different. I think there's like a little more of a mentorship system there where, you take somebody under your wing and you teach them. I think here it's like people are so aggressively ambitious that you almost need to play the shut the door game.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe in Europe, it's not like that. I don't know. I haven't worked in Europe, but he's European.
Oh.
Yeah, he's British.
I think the Europeans, like, they figured it out.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Like, I know a guy who said, like, oh, I'm doing the European method. Like, he'll work, like, he works at a brewery. And he's like, yeah, I'll work, like, for 4 years straight, and then take a year off. And
whoa! Then,
like, it's a European thing. It's
man!
European.
Yeah. Yeah, I got to find out about these things. Yeah. Just like, yeah.
And they figured it out. So you worked at Unfaithful. Now, you've been doing comedies.
Yeah.
And now you're on this, like, very serious, very...
Yeah.
Very heavy movie.
I didn't know I was going to be in comedy. Like, I literally thought I was going to get into drama or thrillers. And it wasn't until I started working with somebody on a short where American Storage, that short, where they were like, you got to do comedy. You're so funny. Like, and the guy's not funny, so I'm not actually funny. No, I'm just kidding. You can cut that out. Anyway. Yeah, no, but so somebody convinced me. They were just like, do comedy. Like, why aren't you, like, because yeah. I wanted to like make art or something. And then, but then we started working together. Brendan started writing. Actually, you know what? Let me back it up. Because first, Adrian's, okay, so this is big. After Unfaithful, Carla Hacken and Elizabeth Gabler, the executives at Fox 2000, I got to know them really well. And they were like, give us your script. We want to option it. I had nothing. Zero script.
I'll get for you guys tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, can you wait like a week or like maybe like a year and a half?
Gotta print it out.
Maybe a year and a half? Yeah, yeah. I'll go print it out.
Like, your phone out, just start typing.
Yeah, it's a page. Here's the treatment. But so I blew it, man. It was one of those situations where I rushed so quickly into the belly of the beast. But I didn't have any ammo. Like, I was like, look at me. And I was like, I'm really funny, or like I got, you know, I got ideas. And it's like, no, you need a script. You need a script. You need two scripts. Yeah. You need two scripts and then one idea. So
just kick yourself in the butt.
Kicking myself.
So then, prepared.
So I'm trying to write and direct a short film. I kind of went crazy. It was. I think I wasn't ready. You know, I think like ultimately I wasn't ready, and I knew it. So trying with all that pressure to create something that is gonna wow everybody is just way too much.
I'm getting anxiety just thinking about it, man.
I know, dude. It was dark days. It was dark days. And
you just went to a weird place.
Yeah. Why did I take my shirt off? I kind of went crazy writing on my own, and I was like, I need a job. I want to learn. And I saw in the UTA job list, comedy producer looking for assistant. And that was about eight months after Unfaithful wrapped.
Yeah.
So I was, eight months of dark days. And I find out it's Judd Apatow. But all I know is he's produced Cable Guy. And I was like, yeah Cable Guy.
Nice.
Like, I love Cable Guy. Didn't know anything about Freaks and Geeks. You know, didn't watch Undeclared.
Yeah.
But
he wasn't the juggernaut that he became.
He had just had a kid. He had had a couple failed pilots.
Right.
And then some shows that came off the air.
That are all like classics now.
Oh, classics now. Yeah. No, you like, I've gone to those like unproduced pilots screenings and stuff. I've seen like, you know, North Hollywood, Sick in the Head. He's got a bunch of pilots that he made that are good. Just didn't, you know, get put to series. And he's doing Anchorman. He's producing. As I go in, it's like, yeah, I got this movie Anchorman with Will Ferrell. I was like, oh my God, Will Ferrell. You know, and
wow.
I was shooting behind the scenes, you know, on it. And at the end of it, Will's like, what Andrew doesn't realize is that camera's filled with coffee. There's no tape. There's just coffee. I was like, yes, I made it. He's making fun of me. But yeah, to be a fly on the wall on that movie with Steve Carell and Paul Rudd and David Koechner.
That was a game changer. That
game
movie
changer.
Was a game changer.
Yeah. Ushered in a whole new era. Didn't do well critically. I don't even think it did well in the theater. But it freaking lasted. Like that thing.
It still lasts. Like it's probably one of the most quoted movies of my generation.
Oh, yeah.
I was actually in a van last weekend. We were driving up to Seattle, and we had eight guys in there. And we were like, all right, guys, top five comedies growing up. Like, what was it? Every single person had Anchorman on their list.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's awesome. We were quoting it, like, before it came out, and people thought we were crazy. You know what I mean? Like, because you have to. Like, you work on it so long, you're doing the Burgundy voice. You're doing Scotch, Scotch, Scotch. Yeah. And everyone's like, what the fuck are you talking about? But, yeah. No, it gets in your head.
Yeah.
It gets in your head. I mean, like, there was one take where it was even before the reshoots, where it was like Will going on the air, hacking the signal, and like they put him on this terrorist group puts him on the air, and he's forced to read the news, and it's news he doesn't want to read, and there was a take for like 15 minutes where everybody was crying. Like, it's not in the movie, but like that was the day where I was like, this is so special, this man is so special, like what he can do, no one else can.
Oh yeah.
Like, just in terms of just people enjoying it on set, and then afterwards, you're just like, this guy is the most talented human being. So early on, I'm like, just in awe, you know?
There's an old Mad Magazine comic that I always think of. I read it as a kid. I saw it as a kid, and I think about it even today. It's just it's just two pictures. The first one, it's like before. And it's a guy getting slammed with a pie in his face, and for a movie. So the guy's filming, the cameraman's cracking up, everybody's just busting up laughing, the director, everybody in the background just dying, crying, laughing with his pie. And then next one is the theater, and there's a pie in the face, and everyone in the crowd just like, arms crossed and straight face. And I just thought, oh my God, you never think about that. Like, it's like
story of my life.
You had to be there.
Yeah, that's the worst. If anybody, like, the death of comedy is you had to be there.
Really.
Do it now. Make it now.
Yeah, make them there.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, but Will Ferrell, like, you on set with him, you instantly you knew, like,
oh,
oh
my God,
this is,
it was something special.
Going to translate. Like, this is
And then honestly, same thing. You know, Judd was after Anchorman came out, and you know, became Beloved.
Yeah.
Judd was writing 40-Year-Old Virgin, which honestly was one of the best scripts I ever read. Like,
yeah.
Like, I, you know, he was writing other stuff to get going, but like right when he had me read that one, I was like, oh yeah, this is the one. Like, this is awesome.
Oh, really?
Right away. Because just conceptually, and then how much heart was already in the story.
Was Steve Carell already like,
yeah, it was Judd and, I'm sorry, yeah, because Judd co-wrote it with Steve.
Yeah.
So it was already Steve Carell.
He,
because on the set of Anchorman, it was like, dude, this guy is legit. This guy's the future. And Judd had the foresight to ask him what he was doing. And had a meeting, and you know, one of the ideas was this character that Steve did for Second City, the 40-Year-Old Virgin, and then boom, like that was the inception. It was like he did the character, you know, it's funny, you get the comic perspective, you understand he's innocent, and other people are not so innocent,
yeah,
and he's having trouble grasping it, and you're like, okay, boom, that's an engine, like that guy's got so far to go. And there's so much humor you can mine from everybody telling him the wrong thing and him trying it and failing. So it's like, even
that was Judd was the game changer. Like, I mean, he has a whole era of comedy in film. Like, just like that style, the writing, the long running times. Like he kind of just gets. He has a freedom that he kind of takes and lets things breathe and lets things like go to places that you didn't even know. Like, oh, there's gonna be a fourth act in this movie. Crazy, like things like that. Like, you don't.
Yeah.
He kind of started doing his own thing, and I can't believe like you got to
witness it.
Yeah. Like, what are some of the like biggest things like you learned from,
yeah,
from working with him? I mean,
from that experience. And actually, can I flash back? Because there's actually a couple things missing.
Of course.
After Anchorman, he goes, "Will you produce the Freaks and Geeks DVD?"
Oh.
And I was, and I again, I didn't know about Freaks and Geeks, so literally in my head, I go, "I don't want to be a DVD producer. Like, what's this guy giving me? Like, I want to be a writer director." And then I had to, you know, go to the mountain, go to the mountaintop, and take a breath.
I gotta go to Japan real quick.
Yeah. I'll be right back. Yeah. And then I was just like, yes, of course. Like, you have to, you know, like it's something I tell people. It's like, no matter what, if somebody talented is asking you to do something, do it. Do it well. Do it better than he wants. Do it, you know, like make it your own.
Yeah.
Because they need it. And if you do a good job, you're going to get something else. You know, and you have to see the long game in it. And it took a little second. It took, you know, I had to eat some pride, you know, just because I had a vision for my career and somebody else has a different vision. But you go like, well, I mean, will this get me there? And will I learn something? And is the person I'm working with a genius? And then you go, okay.
Yeah.
You go, yeah, okay, sure. And then so, I mean, even from that experience, having to go through dailies, find, you know, or go through long cuts of each episode, find those nuggets. You know, it's the stuff I'm saying that my brother does now.
Yeah.
He started working for Apatow right after I left. So I was, you know, I got into this DVD producing business with Judd, and we created our own system with that too. We packed those DVDs. Freaks and Geeks DVD, we have like 26 commentaries for 13 episodes. You know, because like, so we were doubling up, and that was where I met all those guys. So I had to coordinate all, you know, Jason Segel and Franco,
who was in Freaks and Geeks.
Dude, yeah.
Superstars.
Right. So now I'm sharing Clippers tickets with Martin Starr. I love Martin. Martin's like my favorite
Silicon
dude.
Valley is
yeah.
So
instantly,
good.
Instantly, I was like, you're my guy. I love you. I loved him right away. I just knew it. But so, you know, that's where getting to know like Rogan and just getting in with those guys and being again like a fly on the wall that it doesn't matter what I've done or what I can do. It's just I'm learning. You know, it was grad school. So Freaks and Geeks DVD, awesome experience. Undeclared DVD.
Thank God you said yes to those.
Exactly. Right?
Yeah.
You know, so you say yes. It's a it's capital P producer. Do it.
Produce something.
Do it. You know, and it's like it was I learned a ton, and then they started writing 40-Year-Old Virgin with Steve Carell, and then Seth Rogen was co-producer. So already, like, so much talent, so much momentum behind that movie. And again, like, that experience was so magical. So a couple things. One is, and Judd talks about this a lot, Gary Shandling said a set you know, or you want to create an atmosphere on set where magical things can happen. Like, and Judd really instilled that in me, and himself. I mean, he runs a set where you go, wait, are we hanging out? Like, is this fun? Like, you know, like you're just chilling. You're watching people push themselves to extremes, comedic extremes, for your benefit, for their benefit, just to make each other crack up. You know, like they're just, it's almost like this friendly competition or camaraderie where you're just like, how far can we push each other? You know, like how far can this scene go?
I love that.
And I mean, even like there was a scene with like, I mean, there were times when we were going, man, he's pushing it way too far. Like, you know, when Romney Malco and Kevin Hart are yelling at each other, and we're just like, what the hell? This is really uncomfortable.
Reel it back, guys.
Everybody look away. But then, you know, or...
Incredible scene, though.
Yeah, right? Incredible scene. Or the scene in Anchorman where Paul Rudd hops up on the... I don't even know if this is in the movie, but there was a point where he hopped up on that anchor desk in his underwear and started dancing. Like, it might be on the DVD, but like... Paul Rudd in his underwear dancing, you know, like, yeah, sure. You know, like tucking his anchor shirt into his tighty whities. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, those are the special moments where even if they're not in the movie, you know, you're on a cool set. You know that the risks are so high and you have a net. You got everybody is okay if it doesn't work. You can have moments where you go, well, guess that's not going to be in the movie, and nobody's judging you.
Yeah,
you know, it's not like, you know, action cut. Like, it's just action, and then I don't cut. Like, I just yell shit out, and everybody I've worked with does this. You know, Judd Apatow, Nick Stoller, Adam McKay, Seth Rogen, Evan Goldberg. They don't cut. It's because when you cut, and even Adrian Lyne, he doesn't cut. Like, when you cut, you are interrupting the flow. You're the makeup person is hopping on set trying to, you know, fix something, or the hair person. I'd rather have bad continuity with a good joke than great hair and a shitty joke.
Yeah.
You know, or shitty performance. So you just make that, you know, you make the assessment and you make the balance. You just find the right balance and you prioritize.
Was Judd like the one of the first guys to start doing that? Is this a new concept, or is it like?
I mean, like I said, I Adrian did it on, you know, shooting sex scenes. He would yell out, he'd be like, kiss her, you know, harder. But so I was like, ooh, sweet. Like, like a director can do this. I'm gonna participate in my scenes.
Awesome.
But so I would crack up during takes. I would, you know, yell out. I wanted that energy to stay, and I wanted like a momentum like this feeling of like, oh my God, we're building something, we're building it in the moment.
That's a craps player in you, right? Just let it ride. Keep it going.
Let me get 456 horn high yo and a yo 11 for the boys.
Yeah.
No. So.
So you learned so much, and now you're working in comedy.
Yeah. Like, so now it's like, boom, in comedy.
Feels right.
I'm like, and on the set of 40-Year-Old Virgin, or actually while he was writing with Steve Carell, I asked him, because my friend Brendan O'Brien we started writing, and actually he was the sole writer on this short while I was associate producing 40-Year-Old Virgin. And it was American Storage. It was for Martin Starr to be in. And like his boss, I helped him get a gig on Virgin working for Shauna Robertson. And Shauna was so cool. She was the producer. And she was so cool. She let him write in the trailer. So it was the perfect situation. Then Martin was like, hey, should we ask my friend Dave? And it's Dave Krumholtz. You know, so you're like, yeah, your friend Dave can do it. And then I asked Judd, you know, we need somebody to play Martin's boss. Can I ask Steve Carell? And he was like, well, sure, but just give him an out, you know, do it over email so you can say no.
Uh-huh.
And he said yes.
Oh.
And it was like, oh, you know, and
it's all coming together.
So and so I directed that one. Put in a lot of my own money. But again, I think it paid off, you know, after 40-Year-Old Virgin. You know, I think while they were cutting it, we shot that short. I cut it, you know, I, you know, cut it, sent it to festivals. We got into Aspen Comedy Festival, the HBO Aspen one. And then there, talked to studios about developing it into a feature. So, it, you know, we were very smart in terms of preparation, yeah. knowing like, and it's a really good system where you go make the short. That's the proof of concept that you can direct, but then be able to expand it into something more lengthy because that's what you could sell later. Yeah. So if you shot a short or you have a short, yeah, people are like, oh, good directing, but you're probably not getting hired.
Yeah.
Exactly. You're probably not getting hired on a Marvel movie, and you're probably not getting hired on an indie movie. So you need to have the script or the idea so somebody can go, okay, there's future business here. And you have something you can show, which is like what you need. People work on visual stimuli in this business especially. Mm-hmm. So if you can show them something that they can experience, you're not saying it's funny or saying it's, you know, trust me, you had to be there. It's like, no, you're proving it in the meeting that it's good and that
yeah.
they want to do
this
it.
This is what I'm capable
this
of.
This is what I'm capable of. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like, you know, it's your resume, basically.
Yeah.
Plug for yeah. the show.
Hey, and there it is, the name of the show. Got to get it in there somewhere.
Yep.
And then you went on to directing Zac Efron. Doing
yeah.
hilarious.
Oh, I wish I directed
not directing,
Zac.
You wrote, you and Brendan wrote Neighbors.
Yeah.
Neighbors 2.
Yep.
And Mike and Dave Need Wedding Day.
Yeah, man. And I really.
Jeez.
I got to direct second unit on Neighbors, which was really cool. That was, you know, just getting the visual style of the film, mm-hmm. you know, out there. We were going artsy on that. Like a lot of the party sequences, was like, you know, just run and gun kind of stuff. And we used these really small cameras, and we were able to just get cool party moments even while they were shooting the movie.
That's all part of like creating that atmosphere, right?
You, yeah.
Like people are going to be a lot more natural, like their party scenes. If
yeah.
there's not a huge camera on a track running by.
That's
right?
the thing. So it was sort of like picking off, you know, little pops in the
nice.
In those things and creating jokes too. I mean, there was definitely, you know, we really tried to create something special with those party scenes. I worked in a Clockwork Orange reference in one of them. I did a Shining reference. So, like, I like just doing that
Good.
Random
Pay
stuff.
Some homage
and,
to...
and then it got cut off. It got cut out. And I was like, guys, there's Stanley yeah. Kubrick references. We got to put them back in. So I'm very, very proud of that. Also, the other thing...
That's the last thing I would expect to
yeah,
see.
Yeah. That's why. It's like yeah. The Simpsons. It's like, oh, wait, is that from North by Northwest?
Yeah,
yes,
so,
it is.
So cool.
I love it. Like,
Me
it's
too.
Just, like I said, there's like another layer that if you've got, I don't know, I appreciate it. And so, yeah, the only other thing I could say, like my, because I was psyched about that, but on 40-Year-Old Virgin, the Mortal Kombat sequence was me in the trailer that morning learning all the special moves and then doing the finishing move
yeah.
and then running with the tape to set because it was like,
got it.
It was like, yeah, yeah, because we cleared all these video games and then Judd was like, I want Mortal Kombat. And it was like, gulp. And then had to go back and instantly learn and then finally got it on tape and then ran it back in. And then we shot that scene.
So I was like,
just the smallest way that I contributed to that scene was giving the finishing move. I believe it was Sub-Zero.
The one that freezes them and breaks
them?
He
goes, them? Fuck you! Yeah, it's that scene.
I love that scene.
You
yeah.
Know, no, I, yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, no, and then yeah, just writing and then trying to convince people that I can direct, you know? I we were able to sell the show, the American Storage to Paramount Vantage. But then Paramount, you know, I don't know if you've heard of them. Not anymore.
Yeah,
yeah. No, like literally like couches would be removed in between meetings and we'd be like, oh, this place. Like, I think it was like, I think it sunk like 5 feet into the ground. We were like, is it lower? Because they were just.
Ball just through the wall. Like,
yeah. Oh, huh.
It's not good.
Yeah. I guess you're redecorating. Yeah. But then we ended up selling that. You know, I directed that as a pilot for IFC starring Rob Hubel and John Carna. And you know, that was super fun. So it's like even these little things you do back in the day, you know, I directed that pilot like, I don't know, like 5 years ago or 4 years ago. So it's like it came back. Don't throw anything away.
Yeah.
You know?
That's what I'm saying. Telltale Heart.
Yeah, Telltale Heart. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true. I'm never showing that to I refuse.
All right. I don't know. I'm looking forward to it. I think I'll make a resurgence. Put in the Blu-ray of a house.
Yeah.
And just show how far you've come.
How far I've come. Yeah.
Do you see yourself directing more now? Did you get bit by the bug? You're like, you're in it.
Oh, man, I can't do anything else. I love directing. I feel very, very comfortable on set. I think there's something about the time pressure that really frees me up. You just can't worry about bullshit. Like, you just have to do it now. And
you like that?
I love it. It's a rush.
That's
the craps player. If you want to throw it out, if you got a Yo 11, you got to throw that thing out. Yeah. By the way, at the house premiere party, we had craps tables, and I threw out a Yo 11, $100 Yo 11. It's not real money, but $100 Yo 11. While right before the person threw it, boom, 11,
got it,
$1,500. Nice.
Yep.
I think like that. The pressure and the inability to like dwell on a set, it's just it like keeps you going. You go, okay, it's good enough. You know, it's like, yeah, it's like it gets rid of that voice in your head when you're writing, which is that good enough? Is that good enough? Wait, wasn't that from SNL last week? Wait, isn't that a Family Guy joke?
Get that out of here.
Oh. Get out of here.
Everybody I know who works in movies and like, and especially like positions like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're just, it's just, Get from A to B by any means necessary.
Yep.
Yeah, very, very focused.
As a writer, I do not like the phrase good enough, but as a director, I will happily welcome that phrase. You just make a judgment. It's like, where in the movie does this land? Is this the most important scene? What else am I shooting today? You know, is that the most important scene?
Well, like, it's all part of what you're saying earlier. Like, you have the bigger picture,
yes,
always in the back of your head.
Yeah.
So it's not, let's not spend, you know, the rest of our lives on this scene, because we got a bigger thing.
Yeah. And honestly, as a director, sometimes you don't have to justify why you're moving on. Whereas, you know, as a writer, you always have to justify everything. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of people in that room with you, weirdly, when you're writing, especially when you're writing for a studio.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a lot of pressure, and even their voices are in your head. It's hard to kind of get it out. But like, man, when you're on set and that clock is ticking, or, you know, the actor needs direction, or like you need to explain what the scene is, or like what you were thinking, I turn into a different person.
Good.
In a good way.
I think writing, directing something that you wrote, yeah, just such an incredible advantage.
Yeah.
So I imagine that's what you're going to continue doing, is you're just going to direct things that you wrote, or do you see yourself picking up scripts and doing that too?
Yeah, I'm doing all kinds of stuff. Nice. I'm writing and directing a pilot for television. An original, and then I realized my genre, my lane is suburban crime revenge comedies. So I've got something like in that vein that I'm trying to find actually a female writer for, and then I'm co-writing a couple other ones, but they're varying degrees of, you know, my pocket, like my comfort zone as far as like what kind of stuff I've done. And then there's stuff where it's more of a reach, or, you know, has other elements, action comedies, or, you know, even a drama. Like I think, especially as a director,
yeah,
I admire like Ron Howard, but I love fucking, oops, yeah, no,
yeah,
I love John Landis. Like, John Landis is one of my favorite directors, and he could go from horror to comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Or music video, like, so well. I mean, he did Bad, right? Like, so it's like, Jesus. But man, Landis was a huge influence on me.
Yeah.
I
see a lot of horror and comedy like really crossing,
yeah,
over. Like, a lot of the horror directors that come in here, really funny guys, like,
right,
really loose and funny dudes.
Right. I mean,
like,
Jordan Peele. I love Jordan Peele. I think he's,
how could you not,
awesome.
Yeah, incredible.
It's like, what a revelation. And so much bravery too, like to be able to commit like that and take that chance to go from Key and Peele to Get Out. I'm just like,
I believe it, because I actually haven't seen Get Out yet.
Yeah.
But I, like, they did stuff in Key and Peele, like they would do like joke horror scenes, and I remember thinking like, this is actually kind of scary.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
How's he doing that?
There is a fine line, I think, between comedy and horror. And they both work on, you know, speaking of audience reactions. I haven't directed a horror movie, but I would imagine you're videotaping how they're reacting to scares, you know, whether they're looking at the screen. There's probably a whole really fun, screening process for those movies.
It's just that there's a certain amount of discomfort that you gotta create.
Yes.
People, like, and
that's
with comedy and in horror.
It's true.
And I think I was thinking like what you just said earlier, like you like to do like the suburban crime.
Yeah.
So I think what it is you like to find the chaos in the normal. Like, there's just a lot of, you like to take the normal and just make it insane.
Yeah. Yeah. I think like the universal emotional way in, but then the absolute extreme of stupidity or wrongheadedness in the action that they take is my favorite. Like, so I love, you know, people who are trying to be up here but they end up down here. that to me is a huge source of comedy, is how low we are.
And you can make it funny or you can make it dramatic. I mean, like Breaking Bad did that, you know. It's such an interesting concept just to watch people, like how they change, how they sink, how they how they get back out, or if they get out, you know.
For me, that's the journey, is like losing yourself and then putting yourself back together. I like movies that take you on that journey and kind of shake you a little. Or like feel like a roller coaster, you know, where you just go, you're like, whoa, I'm a little queasy. Like, what did I just do? You know, like, what have I done?
The movie's making me feel things.
Cool. I love that. So anytime you can just get a reaction, a visceral reaction, I've watched these masters do it, you know, like watching the crowds just eat up, you know, the chest waxing scene in 40-Year-Old Virgin. You just go, oh my God, like how can I possibly get that? Like, there's these like hallmarks for each of those movies where you're trying to, chasing that dragon, you know, trying to get that laugh.
Oh, and it's huge. I mean, that's such an iconic scene. Like, you think of that anywhere. Like, if I was in that van, let's name something iconic in comedy. Oh, everybody would say that. So,
yeah.
Like, it's huge. So, Andrew, thank you so much for coming on the show, man.
Nice.
And, we learned so much. Like, I think they should just play this podcast at Yale. And
then nice.
Get people to learn things.
Nobody would listen. They're off writing books or writing like symphonies.
A podcast.
Yeah.
So Andrew J. Cohen, co-wrote and directed The House. It's in theaters everywhere. Please go watch this movie and laugh. And now that I think people have a better understanding too of like what kind of happens behind the scenes, which I love, like knowing like how it was made and things like that. Like, it becomes that much more special. So.
Oh, it's messy. It's messy like sausage.
Good. The House. Everybody, watch it now. And just a reminder for everybody listening, the music you're listening to right now is available on iTunes, Amazon, Google Play. Just search Resume Podcast Theme. Help support the show. Click through the Amazon banner at chrisloxamana.com. It doesn't cost you anything extra. Just buy whatever you want, and we get a little cut of it and helps keep the lights on here at Corolla Studios. And, that's it. So, Andrew, thank you so much for coming here and sharing your enlightenment and your knowledge.
All right. On. Yeah, I'm like not enlightened yet. I'll get there. I'll keep making it up the rungs of the ladder.
Yeah, keep going, though, man, and say yes.
I plan to, man.
Projects. The bigger picture is what you guys got to think of, too. And that's pretty much it. So thank you again, Andrew. My name is Chris Laxamana. This has been Resume. We'll let you know.